I'm glad you're all here this week, and I'm glad you're all here every week when we're here, but I'm especially glad that you're here this week. And the reason for that is because, I was a little concerned about this week. After last week, you know, when you give a message where you're looking at the Bible and you're reading these passages and the kind of the sum and the conclusion of those passages is that the writer is saying life is meaningless, I wasn't sure what church would look like this week, you know. I thought there might be a lot of hard discussions that have happened this week. Like, I could see one spouse on Tuesday night asking the other to help wash the dishes and the response being, meaningless, meaningless, they're just going to get dirty again. I could see, you know, some people really love mowing the grass, but other people, if you were looking for a reason not to mow the grass, the fact that the grass is just going to keep growing and the fact that that vain pursuit, you know, could be viewed as meaningless is something that might have hindered that pursuit for you this week. For us, wiping kids' faces feels like this meaningless pursuit because they're going to get dirty again almost immediately after we started wiping them. So I'm glad you're here and looking well this morning. I'm sorry to tell you that this theme of meaningless, meaningless is something we're going to dive into a little deeper and continue exploring today. So last week we looked at the first 11 verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And while we're not going to read the rest of chapter 1 verse by verse, chapter 1, it really continues to sort of set up this book, this narrative, and almost what we're going to look at today is this experiment by Solomon where he is looking for meaning, where he's in this kind of hot pursuit of meaning in his life. And so we're going to look this morning at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 13. And in there, Solomon wrote this. He said, I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. And this shouldn't be a surprise to us if you were here last week. I mean, when we read the passages in 1 Kings that describe Solomon's life, when we think of what we know of Solomon as this man who possessed not just wisdom or not just incredible wisdom, but wisdom that was unparalleled at that time and remains unparalleled to this day. It shouldn't surprise us that he applied his mind to study and to explore and to understand all that was taking place under the heavens. But what we're really seeing, what's laid out here, is that he didn't just haphazardly or unwittingly stumble into this pursuit of meaning in life. Solomon does this in a way that's demonstrating great intention on his part, and more so than many of us demonstrate, or many people, period, demonstrate. Because we all go through this similar process that Solomon describes in Ecclesiastes, I would say. Everyone goes through this process in life where they're trying to figure out what is the meaning of life? What is going on here? What's my role in this? And what's the point of all of this? We all go through that, but some of us, we don't do it as wittingly, as aware as Solomon does as he approaches this. Some of us, when we're looking for meaning in life, you know, we get up in the morning and we go to work and we work as hard as we can because we have this assumption built into us that what we produce with our hands and what we do, the way we provide for our families or the wealth that we acquire in that process, that is the meaning of life, that's what's all around us, that's what this is all about. Now, other people here, when we think about the meaning of life, we invest everything we have into the relationships of the people who are around us. You know, it's not just parents investing to kids, but you invest in your kids, you invest in your friendships, you invest in your other family relationships, you invest in the people who are around you. And some people, they might not say, I'm going to dive in and I'm going to do this because this is my meaning and purpose in life. But they're kind of unwittingly, saying, this is what I'm all about. This is my meaning. This is my purpose. So Solomon, he maybe uses language that we don't use, but he's on this pursuit to figure out what is life all about. And he begins in this calculated and seemingly kind of systematic pursuit of meaning. And he kicks that off with wisdom and intelligence. with learning as much as he can about as much as possible in this time that he has on earth. And it says, if we look in, and we read, if we continued reading in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, it would say that he's successful in this endeavor. It says he's wiser. He gains wisdom beyond anyone who had led God's people before. And as only the third king, on one hand, you might be tempted to say, so he's saying he's wiser than two people. That's not a very big deal. Most of us could say that in this room. But if we think about the great leaders, even outside of the kings, that took place in the history of God's people, Solomon is saying, I pursued wisdom and knowledge to learn about everything I could under the heavens, and I was wiser than any one of the rulers of God's people that preceded me. And so, even in this wisdom that he gained and that he acknowledged that he gained and that was great, he just doesn't quite find the satisfaction that he's looking for. We see that in verse 18 in chapter 1 when he says, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. It's kind of like that idea that ignorance is bliss, in a sense. Solomon says the more he learned about earth, the more he learned about this life that he was experiencing, the more he learned about people and understood the creation that was around him, the more he learned, the more depressing and unsatisfying that experience was for him. The more he understood, the more he could see and feel how messed up things had become, how wrong things were. It didn't provide him with that sense of meaning that he thought it might. And a few verses earlier, he says that looking for meaning in this kind of a manner by learning as much as possible or gaining as much wisdom is like chasing after the wind, which is a beautiful description of a meaningless act. You can never identify what you're chasing. You could never identify if you achieved it. You could never grasp it, even if you could catch it. Solomon says this is what it was like when he pursued wisdom and understanding. And then he moves on. And we're going to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And beginning in verse 1, he says that after wisdom and intelligence haven't provided him with that sense of meaning, he moves on to a different kind of life. It says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. And starting at the end of verse 3, I'll say that we get kind of one of the big pictures of the meaning of this book of Ecclesiastes. So Solomon doesn't just say, I'm looking at all of these different avenues of pursuing meaning for myself. I'm looking at this so that I can just find meaning in my life. He says, I'm doing this so that I can discover what is good for people to experience under the sun. Where is this sense of goodness? What are the right pursuits that we need to have? It was for himself, but it was also for all of us. It was for all people to be able to understand what is the meaning of life. And in some ways, it couldn't be more perfect that it was a king who was going on this kind of systematic pursuit for all of us, because there were things that Solomon didn't have to worry about that many of us do have to worry about. He didn't have to worry about resources. He had a limitless amount of resources at his disposal so that he could experiment in whatever way it is that he wanted without concern for the well-being of his family, without concern for running out of money, without concern for doing a poor job at work because he was investing in so many other areas. Solomon literally is saying, this is going to be the pursuit of my life. I'm going to systematically explore what it looks like to find meaning under the sun. What it looks like to find meaning in the days that we have in this life. And so, we see that one of the first things he does is puts this into practice by living large. By living the good life. Pursuing laughter. Pursuing what he later in reflection comes to call as folly. by pursuing to cheer himself with wine. It's fitting because many of us might say, hey, we've kind of done the same thing, right? Or could maybe identify that we're in that position right now, that we're pursuing the good life by pursuing pleasure, that we're looking for meaning in life by pursuing things that bring us pleasure, by pursuing experiences, by kind of living into that kind of party lifestyle. That's what Solomon's describing here. But the difference is, for many of us, when we say we're living a party lifestyle, we might mean that we indulged a little bit, that we had too many deviled eggs at the Memorial Day party or something like that. But Solomon, he's a guy who has all the resources in the world, and he puts them into use to pursue pleasure. We see this in 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 22 and 23. This lays out what Solomon had at his disposal every day, just in regards to food and to some of his food. In verse 22, it says, Solomon's daily provisions were 30 cores of the finest flour and 60 cores of meal, 10 head of stall-fed cattle, 20 of pasture-fed cattle, and 100 sheep and goats, as well as deer, gazelles, roebucks, and choice fowl. And so a core, and this is like rough. People don't know the exact measurement of the size of a core, but it's not just like a cup of flour that it's talking about. It's like a bushel, a large container of flour. So it's saying he had a lot of flour and a lot of meal and the finest things at his disposal every day. And in addition to those kinds of things, he has 30 head of cattle. He has 100 sheep and goats and all of these other animals that are mixed in. And these are his daily provisions. And so when we think about this, we think, why on earth would anyone have that much food in their daily provisions? And part of the reason that we'll look at today is when you have 700 wives and 300 members of your harem, then there's a lot of mouths to feed at the table when you're feeding the temple courts. But this number, when you look at estimates, and it's, again, it's hard to come up with any kind of an exact figure of the number of mouths that this large quantity of food would feed. But the numbers are over 10,000. That's like the conservative end of the spectrum. So Solomon is living this life of incredible indulgence. And he's living this life where it's not just like he's having a little bit of wine with dinner. He's pursuing wine to make himself happy. He's pursuing this life of folly and this life of partying to make himself happy. He's taking all of his energy and he's applying it. And he's the most popular guy in town because he's throwing a party any day or night or time of the week that it suits his whims and desires. He's just living a life of hedonism, where he's looking at it and he's saying, I'm going to do whatever I can possibly do to fill myself with as much pleasure as possible to help me to experience happiness in this life. And when he does that, he doesn't find fulfillment. And so he moves on. And beginning in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 4, it says this, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. And remember, this is a book that's a reflective piece. He's writing this later in his life about things he did earlier in his life. And so in his narrative, he's looking back on remembering kind of those early partying days where he was pursuing meaning for pleasure, pursuing meaning with pleasure, by pleasure. And then he's saying, that didn't really satisfy me. So then I kind of put on my big boy king pants and I went to work and I did as many projects as I could to become great, to feel this sense of accomplishment. It's another thing that we do all the time. We pursue meaning through pleasure. We pursue meaning through toil. We pursue meaning through accomplishing things. And so, just like his parties, where we can kind of relate, but at the same time, his parties were so much more incredible than what we can experience or imagine, the same is true of his accomplishments. Solomon is this guy who gets an incredible amount done. You know, for me, this afternoon, I have a leaky faucet that I need to fix. And when I figure that out, which will take me way longer than a lot of other people to figure out how to fix in a couple trips to Home Depot, when I figure that out, I'm going to feel this sense of accomplishment. On Friday, when I mowed my grass and did some weeding in my yard, I got done and I felt a sense of accomplishment. Solomon is planting groves of trees. He is building forests. He's digging reservoirs of water. He's having all of these incredible projects that are done. We know when we read in, again in Kings, that it took him 7 years when he oversaw the construction of God's temple. And that when that building was constructed, it wasn't just a little modest building. It was a building that was incredibly extravagant. It was a building that was beautiful to look at. It was a building that was filled with precious metal and with beautifully cut stone. And then it took him 7 years to do that, but he follows that up by taking 13 years to build his own palace and his own house, almost twice as long. And when we read the descriptions of that palace, it sounds incredible. It's filled with this precious wood, this cedar. It's filled with these beautiful cut stones again, and it has lots and lots and lots of gold. And so Solomon is this guy who pours his life into toil and accomplishing things so that he feels this sense of meaning. And when he does this, he continues in verse 7 by saying, I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well. The delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. And so we see not only did he oversee these incredible projects, but he began to use people as a means to find his meaning in life. We see that all through these verses. When it says that he acquired slaves for himself, when it says that he acquired singers for himself, that's like a way of saying Solomon, he likes the music, so he acquires the band. He doesn't buy the CD, he buys the people and has them make music for him. He has slaves that he brings into his house. He begins, we see, to turn away from God and from the rules and from the created order and the commandments he's been given, and he begins to build this harem of women that are there to only fulfill the desires of his heart and the whims of his desires. He begins to look to people for that process. And he says throughout all of this, it's like, look, I used all of my wealth to pursue pleasure. I used all of my wealth and my power and my authority to pursue these projects. I used all of the people that I had at my disposal, these slaves, these singers, this harem. I used all of them. And what he sought out was this sense of satisfaction in life. He had a life that is impossible for us to relate to or imagine. He had everything at the tip of his fingers to provide every need that he could possibly want. And he tells us what that experience was like in verse 10. He says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. And this is a message that sometimes we kind of try to insulate and really shelter ourselves from in the church. But the truth is that Solomon found delight in the life that he was leading. To read that again, it says he denied himself nothing that his eyes desired. He refused his heart no pleasure, and his heart took delight in all his labor, and this was the reward for all his toil. Solomon didn't say, hey, the party the drinking, the opulent feast, this extravagant parties I was throwing, it didn't make me happy. He didn't say the building projects, the great house that I was living in, the wealth that I was experiencing, it didn't make me happy. The people that I was using, the people that I had, you know, at my beckoning call to fulfill every whim and desire, to fan me if I was hot, you know, to do whatever it is that I wanted them to do at every point. He doesn't say that didn't make me happy. He describes this as saying, those were what his eyes desired. That was the pleasure that his heart sought out. That was the delight that he experienced whenever he lived a life like that. And that's a message that we kind of try to shield ourselves from in the church, because it's clear Solomon's living in excess. Solomon's living in sin. Solomon is doing all of these things that are immoral, but he's having a good time doing it. He's kind of taking his situation and he's experiencing delight whenever he goes through this. And sometimes we get this impression in the church, and this is because of some of the things we've been taught, that God doesn't want us to experience pleasure or happiness in this life. A lot of people, especially if you're here and you're not really sure about where you stand with God, or a lot of people that you know who would actively say they're not Christians, there's this view of God that the church has helped to create, that he kind of sits in heaven in his judgment seat as this eternal killjoy, that he wants us to be unsatisfied, that he wants us to never experience delight or the pleasures of our heart. There's this idea that God doesn't want us to be happy, but that's not what we find in Scripture. And that's not what Solomon says here. In verse 10, Solomon says right at the end, this was the reward for my toil. The issue for Solomon was not that these things made him feel unhappy. They made him feel very happy. But he recognized that in those moments of happiness, they were fleeting. That he received his reward in full right in that moment. That when he was laughing at the party, enjoying himself, that was fun, and that was the reward, that there wasn't any meaning or substance beyond that. When he was building his house, and when he was forcing other people through labor to build his house, and he sat in his throne, he received the enjoyment for that work right in that moment. There wasn't any meaning or purpose that transcended it. And we see that because in verse 11, he says this: yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Even in the midst of the pursuit of his pleasure and his accomplishments, in verse 9, if you look back there, it says that even in the midst of this, Solomon retained the wisdom that had been given to him by the Lord. And so, as he's going through this, he didn't lose that sense of wisdom. And as he evaluated what was taking place in this kind of this great experiment or this pursuit, he comes to the conclusion that it doesn't hold meaning. That his accomplishments, that his fun, that it didn't mean anything. And it seems that Solomon just has this unquenchable desire and drive as he pursues meaning. It doesn't seem like anything is going to help him to feel like he arrives at meaning. The image that came to my mind as I read this passage was like someone who was stuck in a little boat out at sea. And they become thirsty when they're in that boat. And they are surrounded for as far as they could see in any direction by water in the ocean. But as they drink that salt water, they can never get that sense of satisfaction. They can never have that sense of thirst quenched. And that's kind of the picture that we see when we think of the life of Solomon, that he is surrounded by everything he could want, by people that are fulfilling every desire he could want, and yet he just can never feel that sense of satisfaction. Many people read through these words and they hear this commentary on the life of Solomon and on the morality or the immorality of his actions. And they come back to this image. Like we said, that for some reason God doesn't want them to be happy. God doesn't want them to experience pleasure or joy. That because what Solomon did was wrong and it didn't provide him with the meaning that he was looking for, and that was in laughter and pursuing delight and pursuing pleasure, that God doesn't want us to experience that in this life. But that just is not what we read about God in Scripture. Pastor Matt Chandler, a great preacher and teacher, he succinctly addressing this topic one time said, "There is not one pleasure under the sun which God did not create or ordain. There isn't one good thing that we experience in this life which doesn't come from Him. The problem is that many of the things that bring our hearts delight, many of the desires that we have been wrecked by the fall, have been wrecked by the sin that we experience in our lives. It isn't that pleasure is wrong. The truth is that we are all seeking pleasure from the moment that we are born. You know, we have it's crazy to think that our son's 2 months old already, how fast that happens. But we have this new baby, and when he is hungry, he cries. And when he is tired, he cries. And when he's a little bit gassy, he cries. And when he's too cold, he cries. And when he's too hot, he cries. And I'm not saying he cries all the time. He does all the cute baby noises as well and is happy a lot of the time. But he is unabashedly pursuing his pleasure and happiness. If there's something that's out of balance, he can't tell us what it is, but he lets us know that he's not happy. And he keeps crying until he finds that happiness. And as adults, even though we can wrap words around those feelings, we oftentimes do that same exact thing. We're people that are wired to pursue our delight, pursue pleasure, pursue happiness. And the reality is that this is part of the way God ordained us to be. This is part of the way God designed us to be, as he designed us to experience a life of delight and pleasure. So it isn't that pleasure is wrong in some kind of a sense. It's that sin has infiltrated the desires of our heart and the things that we experience in this life. In The Weight of Glory, which is a book of, it's really a collection of sermons by C.S. Lewis that were transcribed and made into a book. In one of those messages, he says this: "If there lurks in most modern minds the notion that to desire our own good and to earnestly hope for the enjoyment of it is a bad thing, I submit that this notion has crept in from Kant and the Stoics and is in no part of the Christian faith." So C.S. Lewis is saying that this idea that God is this killjoy who doesn't want us to have any fun, this idea that we're supposed to be people who are very good and very boring, this idea that we're supposed to be people who don't find enjoyment in this life under the sun, that it's something that crept in from Greek philosophy, it's something that crept in from poor theology. It just doesn't reflect who God is and what he laid out for us. And he goes on to explain that by saying, "Indeed, if we consider the unblushing promises of reward and the staggering nature of the rewards promised in the Gospels, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak." Then he describes us and says, "We are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition." This is, he's like exactly describing the life of Solomon. "When infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased." The problem of Solomon, it wasn't that he had this sense of desire for pleasure that was too great. It was that he was placing it in the wrong things. It wasn't that being a person who's seeking out pleasure in life is necessarily wrong. It's that he was seeking out pleasure in the wrong things. Paul writes for us about this truth in Romans chapter 1. And as he's opening up this great letter, he explains that part of the effects of the fall is that we stopped looking to God and we started the Creator and we started looking to the creation to satisfy us. In Romans 1:25, Paul writes, "They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised." C.S. Lewis says in that passage that when we get entangled in pursuing all of the pleasures of this world, it isn't that we're seeking too much joy, it isn't that we're seeking too much pleasure, or that there's some level of pleasure that is too good for us and that causes us to be sinful in this life. It's that we've lowered our standards of what it means to seek pleasure compared to the incredible joy that is offered to us in Christ. The problem of Solomon, and the same problem that many of us have today, is not that we want to enjoy life, but it's the things that we seek to provide us with that enjoyment. This is what Jesus explains to the woman at the well in John 4. And we're not going to read that passage, though I would certainly encourage you to read that passage. When he says to her, there's a Samaritan woman who's coming at the well in the middle of the day because she's ostracized and she would certainly be looked down on in culture and in her society. And he says, kind of basically paraphrasing, "You can keep coming back here to fill up your bucket every day, or the Messiah is coming who will provide you with living water and you will never thirst again." For many of us, we keep looking to have our thirst quenched in things that just won't satisfy us. And so this morning, I'd like to ask you to identify where you seek out pleasure and a sense of accomplishment in your life. Is it the things that are under the sun, or is it the things of our Father? Let's be a people that confess when we seek fulfillment in other things and look to the wonderful name of Jesus, the name of the man who could not be held by death, the name of the man who silenced the boast of sin and shame over our lives, the man who has no rival or equal in all of creation. And let's look to him as our living water so that as we drink, we'll never be thirsty again.